This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 1-877-803-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
We have a nice show tonight without having to ask for money.
That is a pleasure.
But if you had pledged to KPFT and for our keeping us going, please do fulfill your pledges. Tonight we're going to be talking about the outgoing and the incoming powers to be at PFLAG. We're going to miss Jim Noel and Jim and Sue Noel, who are long time involved in PFLAG here in Houston. And they're moving to North Carolina. And the new people who are taking charge will be with us. Jeff Reed will join us talking about politics and what's going on at Houston Equal Rights Alliance. And then we have a talk about the activist workshop that's coming up on February 15th. And Americans United, what is that?
It's kind of a separation between church and state-based organization. And then we'll also have a repeat or kind of a twisted interview by J.D. with Ann Reed, who had to reschedule her Houston show. She was supposed to appear in November, had laryngitis, and had to reschedule, and that'll be on February 25th. So J.D. just did a little mixing and has that interview. Plus, we'll have This Way Out and music and no telling what else.
Yes, but the top of our news tonight is the Grand Marshals. Nominees have been announced. Actually, we just got this hot off the presses from Nancy Ford.
This is an exclusive only to Queer Voices.
Well, and we need to do this because the voting starts on Wednesday.
Oh.
So in the female category is Marie Gonzalez, Judy Reeves, and Barbara Walker. In the male category, myself, Jack Belinsky,
yay,
Fred Walters, and Christopher Everett, I believe. And
I think it says Garrett.
Garrett, okay.
It's hard to read this
well,
writing.
Well, and let me back up. Maria Gonzalez is known for the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, among other things, and PVA. Judy Reeves is involved in GCAM, and she directs plays. And
GCAM is the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum, trying to preserve our GLBT history in Houston.
And she's involved in ICOH, which is the Imperial Court of Houston, and I'm sure another of other things in Houston. And Barbara Walters Walker. She's involved in the
clinic, and she was involved in the court system. I don't know what else. She does a lot of fundraising. Good person.
On the male selections, Fred Walters runs the Buyers Club. He's been on the show many times. And Christopher Garrett, I believe he's with the counseling center.
Maybe. We don't know.
Yes.
Maybe we shouldn't.
Or the
say.
Clinic.
he does something. He's good. He wouldn't have been nominated if he wasn't good.
And organizations, LOAF, Lesbian Over the Age of 50s, ICON, Imperial Court of Houston, and the Houston Black Tie Dinner Incorporated. And honorary Grand Marshal, there's only one nominated, Garnett Coleman.
So Representative Garnett Coleman will be the honorary Grand Marshal. And, you know, I always have to say, there are two Grand Marshals. One is male, one is female. The title should the gender should never be part of the title. But
it's a world according to Deborah.
Yes, in the world according to Deborah, who is always right.
So voting starts this Wednesday at the Brazos River Bottom, 2400 Brazos, from 6 to 10 p.m. And then this Saturday and next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Pride office, 1415 California. And there's another one a week from Wednesday at the place to be announced. You can, supposedly the bio should be up on the website, pridehouston.org, at least that's what I've been told, before starting starts on Wednesday. And to vote, all you have to do is be a resident of Harris or surrounding counties. And when you vote, you need to show some form of ID, like a driver's license or a utility bill.
See, I think they should be forced to show their voter registration card, because that proves that they're registered to vote. And if they don't have that, then they can get registered right there.
And that's the rules according to Deborah Bell.
Well, it's just an idea that I have.
But yes.
Well, of course you do.
I have to.
Sure.
No, that's great. That's a great idea.
Since Jack used to be the executive director of Pride Houston and was a founder of that organization, I was one of the people that nominated you, and no one has ever deserved this honor more. So I am totally biased in who I'm supporting. It's good people. We need the community to come out. You know, sometimes people don't really know the people that are nominated that well. The community at large doesn't know. We know about it because we're active in the community. But this is a way to kind of shine a spotlight on some of the work that people do in our community. That's one good thing about it.
Well, okay. And up next is News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 10th, 2007. Colombia's highest court ruled this week that gay and lesbian couples in long-term relationships should have the same rights to shared assets as heterosexual couples. The Constitutional Court's decision marked the first recognition of same-gender couples' rights in the South American nation. A lawsuit filed by the gay and lesbian rights organization, Colombia Diversa, and members of the School of Law from the Universidad de los Andes led to the court ruling. The judges decided that if a lesbian or gay couple of 2 years or more separates, the assets accumulated during the relationship should be divided between the two, and in the case of death, the survivor should receive all the assets. Up until now, they automatically went to surviving blood relatives. The court struck down the definition of cohabiting couples as men and women in a 1990 law that gave unmarried couples joint ownership of land and property rights when one partner died. The judges said the law must be gender neutral. Representatives of the country's dominant Roman Catholic Church condemned the ruling, calling it anti-family. They said it could open the door to same-gender marriage and adoption. Lesbi-gay activists applauded the decision, saying that it will benefit as many as 100,000 couples in the country. They vowed, however, to continue fighting for full parity with heterosexual couples.
Same-gender couples in Portugal have also acquired some additional rights, according to a report by João Paulo on the website PortugalGay.pt. While it wasn't clear if the changes instituted in late December came through court rulings or legislation, public employees who live in a same-gender relationship for at least 2 years can now extend their health coverage and certain other benefits to their partners. The nation's de facto union law now also covers immigration. A Portuguese citizen who lives with a foreign same-gender partner for at least 3 years, whether in Portugal or abroad, can sponsor the partner for Portuguese citizenship. A declaration from a judge is required to confirm the legitimacy of the relationship.
The cabinet of Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi this week approved legislation creating a form of civil unions for gay and lesbian couples. The bill is expected to be presented to Parliament later this month, but since Prodi's government only has a one-seat majority, passage is far from certain. The opposition right-of-center coalition, led by former PM Silvio Berlusconi and aligned with the Vatican, opposes the measure. Prodi's ability to secure cabinet approval is considered by many observers to be a major accomplishment in itself. A loose coalition of 9 small parties, ranging from communists to Catholic centrists, his government has been trying to draft a civil partnership measure for months. While Prodi opposes full marriage equality, legal recognition of same-gender couples was part of an election platform that propelled him to a razor-thin victory last year. said to fall short of the UK's civil partnerships law and to be closer to France's pacts of civil solidarity, the legislation would allow Italian lesbi-gay couples, as well as unmarried heterosexuals, to sign a civil registry. That would entitle them to share pensions and health insurance, gain hospital visitation and inheritance rights, and permit them to be considered the same as heterosexual married couples for public housing. Pope Benedict XVI last month warned Italian lawmakers that the Vatican will use all of its influence to defeat projects aimed at granting improper legal recognition to forms of unions other than traditional marriage. Australia's Attorney General Philip Ruddock announced this week that the Civil Partnerships Bill, introduced in December in the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT, would be overturned if it's passed into law. Critics condemned the move as premature since the legislation has yet to even be debated in the ACT legislature. Similar in some ways to Australia's individual states, the ACT can pass laws governing its residents. A Civil Unions Act passed by the ACT legislature last year would have granted all the rights of marriage except in name to same-gender couples. It was overruled by the Governor General at the urging of the federal government because it was said to be too close to and would therefore undermine the institution of marriage. Ruddock said that the newest version of the bill doesn't differ much from the earlier legislation. It removed a statement that same-gender unions were to be treated in the same way as marriages, but Ruddock said that it otherwise only changed the language it used to describe the relationships from civil unions to civil partnerships. ACT Attorney General Simon Corbell angrily told reporters that this is incredibly high-handed and arrogant. They have in no way sought to engage in any dialogue with us. They have simply announced by press release that they will overturn a piece of legislation that hasn't even passed the ACT Assembly. He said the legislation would probably not be considered in the current session, but that it could be brought up after the next elections. Maybe then, he said, we'll have a federal government more willing to let the ACT legislate for its own citizens. And Australia's Attorney General Philip Ruddock has denied previous reports that his government's family law, same-sex adoption bill, would ban the recognition of more than one parent of foreign children adopted by Australian gay or lesbian couples. Ruddock said in a letter to The Age newspaper this week that the bill would only prevent same-gender adoptive parents from using the government's inter-country adoption program. The complete text of the bill has yet to be released.
A transgender woman in Nepal has won what LGBT rights advocates in the country are calling a major victory. The government has agreed to revise the citizenship records of Chandra Musselman to show her gender as both male and female. Musselman was born biologically male. She's in her 20s and has not begun hormone therapy, the first step in gender reassignment. She presents as female and applied to the government to have her official records amended. Blue Diamond Society, Nepal's major LGBT rights organization, said it's the first time the government has officially recognized transsexuals. Effeminate gay men and transsexuals are routinely arrested and beaten by police in Nepal's major city, Kathmandu.
Britain's Football Association has banned homophobic chanting by fans during matches. The association's stadium regulations have focused until now primarily on racism, with the only mention of bias based on sexual orientation appearing in rules covering the behavior of players. The regulations signed by all Premier League and Football League clubs now explicitly target homophobia as unacceptable. The association has even established a hotline to report any discriminatory behavior. The new rules, which will take effect next season, call for everyone connected with football to behave in a sporting manner.
Former U.S. professional basketball star John Amici has become the first National Basketball Association player to come out as a gay man. He'll discuss his closeted career on an episode of the cable sports network ESPN program Outside the Lines. His book, Man in the Middle, in which he chronicles his NBA career and the challenges of being a closeted professional athlete, will be released later this month. Of Nigerian descent, Amici was raised in England by a single mother. The 6'10" center spent only 1 year playing high school basketball in the United States before becoming a standout on the Penn State University basketball team from 1992 to 1995, where he was twice named a first-team academic All-American. Originally with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Amici became the first undrafted player in NBA history to start in his first game as a rookie. He played in 301 games over 5 seasons, mostly with the Utah Jazz and Orlando Magic, before retiring in 2003. Reaction by current NBA players has been generally positive. So what? One of his former coaches, Doc Rivers, now with the Boston Celtics, told reporters, "Can he rebound? Can he shoot? Can he defend?" About Amici's being gay, he said, "I couldn't care a flying flip about it." Amici is listed on the website 100 Great Black Britons and now runs a charitable foundation designed to increase participation in physical activity and holistic support services by building affordable, quality facilities and making expert coaches, respected mentors, and educators available to all young people. The foundation's first sports center was built in Manchester, England, close to Amici's childhood home of Stockport.
And finally, some queer activists in the U.S. state of Washington are challenging opponents of marriage equality to either put up or shut up. Washington's Supreme Court last year cited procreation as the major reason to keep marriage exclusively heterosexual. Judges in several other U.S. states have used the same rationale to rule against marriage equality. The Washington Defense of Marriage Alliance has started circulating petitions for a ballot initiative that would require couples to prove that they can have children before they're issued marriage licenses. It would also annul the marriage if a couple fails to have children within their first 3 years together. The lesbi-gay group has two additional proposals, one to outlaw divorce for married couples who have children, and one stipulating that unmarried heterosexual couples who have children would automatically be considered legally married. The group needs to collect more than 200,000 signatures by July in order to qualify any of the measures for the Washington state ballot, which its leader Gregory Gadlow acknowledges will be difficult. Evan Wolfson, executive director of the national queer advocacy group Freedom to Marry, told San Francisco's Bay Area Reporter that the initiative proposals, as absurd as they may be, have real educational value. It's already triggered news stories all around the country and invited people to think through how they would feel if this kind of bogus reason were applied across the board, he said. I wouldn't vote for it and I wouldn't sign the petition, but I'm happy to have the conversation.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 10th, 2007. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
I don't know what was happening there. That was some kind of weird stuff going on. This is Deborah Bell, and I am going to be talking with all of the parents and friends of lesbians and gays. Actually, we have with us Jim Knoll and his lovely spouse, Sue, who are the Jim is the outgoing president of PFLAG Houston, and we have Tim and Rose Surum, Tim is the incoming president, and so we're going to talk a little bit about what Parents and Friends and of Lesbians and Gays is all about, and then we're going to have a little bit of the personal story that's behind the involvement of these wonderful activists. So, Jim, I know you're not feeling real well tonight, but let's start off with, can you tell us a little bit about the history of PFLAG?
Well, yes. PFLAG itself goes back some 30 years and to roughly the time of Stonewall. Right now, there are something like 500 chapters around the country, probably 8 or 10 in Texas. The one in Houston is one of the most active in the country and one of the largest, with about 275 or so paid members. And it's our hope that it can grow even more.
Okay, and what is the mission behind Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays?
PFLAG stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and has three missions, and we often refer to it as three legs of a stool. The first and probably the most important is support, and that's support both to GLBTs and to their parents, families, and friends. The second is education of the wider community, as well as education of families and friends, particularly parents. And the third is advocacy, in which we try to change society in the direction of more equal rights and protections for members of the GLBT community.
And one of the things that you do is you hold monthly meetings, and there's some a special kind of work that goes on in those meetings. Tell me a little bit about what it might be like to go to a PFLAG meeting for the first time. Say I just found out that my child is gay. And somebody says, you should go to PFLAG. So I go to PFLAG.
A very common case. We start off by having a program, and the program can be various topics. Once a year we have a session on coming out, how people have come out to their parents, to themselves sometimes, to their friends, to their workplace colleagues. We have at least one session a year on couples, typically in February in association with Valentine's Day.
And you just had that one February 4th?
We did.
Yeah, which was my wedding anniversary date, even though that marriage is long over.
I knew there was somebody absent, and now I know who it is. And we also have a meeting where we recognize the scholarship winners of the PFLAG Hatch Youth Scholarship Foundation. We have programs on transgenders. We have programs on teens. We have programs on workplace discrimination and programs that are being activated to try to reduce that discrimination. And so it's both support and education.
And so after the program, what happens?
Then we have a break and divide into small support groups. And this is where, for example, you might derive the most benefit, wherein you could explain your situation and your problems and your frustrations and fears and so forth to other people, and in a totally confidential, supportive environment, they would explain their stories, and I would hope help you to understand that you're not the first mother of a gay or lesbian or bisexual transgender child, and that there's a lot of education and support and a lot of other parents who have gone this way before and who are more than happy to help you.
Yeah, I think that is from a perspective of that it still can be a surprise to people to have a child come out to them as gay, lesbian, bisexual. I actually don't think many people come out as bisexual. They don't say, oh, right. Guess what, Mom and Dad, I'm bisexual. Right. Because that's still kind of a hidden element of the community. And then, of course, the issue of having a child who is going through the process of gender identification, and certainly if they're making a transition, male to female, female to male, and having to adjust to that and get to a place of understanding and acceptance is part of the continuum of mm-hmm. what goes on. So tell me a little bit about your first, how you and Sue got involved to begin with.
Sue was the first one, so I'll let her take care of that.
We have a lesbian daughter, but I didn't come to PFLAG because we were comfortable with her. But then some years later, I was the American homestay mom for a young man from Korea. And when he realized that he was gay, he went through quite a rough time trying to deal with himself and understand this phenomenon. And so I thought, aha, this is time I will take him to PFLAG for him, not for me. And I found out that I had so much to learn. And I decided to stay and to see what I could do to alleviate some of the hostility and rejection that so many gay people undergo.
Uh-huh. And how long ago was that?
That was 12 years ago.
And I understand that your daughter has not particularly been active in a community.
Not super
activist.
Active, but that's okay. She's busy taking care of her own life,
uh-huh.
and that's how it should be.
Well, you and Jim certainly have been prime advocates for the community, and you go around town and you see Sue just about at everything, and she's always speaking out. She's wonderful about writing letters to the editor and educating people and making sure they're informed of things going on in the community. And if somebody wants to get involved in PFLAG, what is the first step? Make a phone call? Go
sure.
to a website?
Any of the above. Either go to the website, which is www.pflaghouston.org, call the helpline. Write an email to the helpline. The helpline is number is 713-46-PFLAG or 713-467-3524. But either way, this person will get the necessary information to come to a meeting, and we welcome everybody.
And if you Google the words parents and friends, parents and family, of gays and lesbians and gays, almost any combination of that, you'll click on something. There is a national organization that has chapters all over the country, and sometimes in places you wouldn't necessarily expect. I mean, there are some small towns that have PFLAG chapters. So what are some of the high points of your involvement with the organization? What do you feel like your biggest accomplishments have been?
Well, one of the most burdensome, in a way, was organizing the Love One Out protest a couple of years ago. That's when the right wing sent a group to try to explain to gay people that they probably could change their sexual orientation. So we organized a protest on that. One of the things I'm happy about is that when PFLAG National opened its mission statement to include transgenders, that we were able to organize a group and have our Houston group also become very welcoming at the same time. So it's just been activism on many, many different levels in organizing groups of people to understand their gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender children.
Mm-hmm. And as we know, as being GLBT, that we come out for the first time to ourselves, but then there's that process of coming out to family or to friends or to work colleagues. What every new person you meet, there's an opportunity to come out, so it's a continuing process. But because being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender is also a culture, it's important for people to understand about that. It's not just a sexual identity. As one of my friends said, it's not just something that happens in the bedroom. It's our lives. It's what we are about in so many other ways. And we have a rich culture and history. In what ways do you think that you've grown and changed over the years as you've been involved, as you've learned more?
Well, I think certainly one way is that I think we've both learned that individuals can change society. They're not big changes. They may not be permanent changes. When we have our educational conferences for educators, we don't change the school district. We may have an impact on 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 teachers and counselors and psychologists and so on who attend. Or we may have an impact on half of them or a fourth of them. But that's all right. That's really what we expect. If we can change the world 10 or 20 or 30 people at a time in terms of educating them so they understand their students and the young people they deal with, we've had a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm perfectly happy knowing that while we can change things, we can't change everything now.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do things.
But being fair for that one child that needs you or that one parent that is dealing with something, that is what makes a difference. And so you're going to be leaving us, which is devastating to me, especially all these years that Sue's been part of my life, being good Unitarians and part of the women's group. But you've made a decision in your life to move somewhere else. And why is that? Why are you leaving us, Sue?
Well, none of our daughters lives in Texas anymore.
Uh-huh.
So one of them decided she was going to interest her retiring parents in moving up her way, which in this case means North Carolina, Western North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a very mixed blessing as we go about packing things and thinking we're leaving so much that we know and cherish here. We're looking forward to going there, but we'll also miss some absolutely tremendous people that we have known here.
And do you think you'll be active in PFLAG there?
There is no organized PFLAG.
Well, not yet.
on any significant degree in the area. There's small cities, and they're trying to get organized. And some of them have been organized and have sort of gone into a slow realm. But I'm hoping that we will. We definitely have a presence there in one form or another, so that people will know in the high schools and in the colleges that there is help for them should they need it.
I guess in a lot of ways, your family has grown by all the people whose lives you've touched here in Houston. That's not your biological family. And we really thank you and appreciate you. You were honored as Grand Marshals of the honorary Grand Marshals of Pride, and certainly deserve that. And
that was terrific. We loved it.
Yeah, and we love you. And, of course, during the parade, PFLAG always gets the biggest applause, because I really think they probably make the most difference of any group in the work that they do.
Deb, I want to add one thing real fast, is to make sure that this listening audience understands that PFLAG is open to GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, as well as their parents and families. And so often they feel, oh, this is not for me. But it truly is, and it's a wonderful affirmation for them to come and find that there are supportive parents there, and that perhaps in doing so they might be able to persuade their own parents to come.
Well, and it's helpful to the people that come, mm-hmm. because they get to have dialogue with actual GLBT people.
Definitely. It's a very supportive situation for people on both sides.
Okay, so we're letting the Knowles, we're letting them leave us reluctantly, but as any good people do, before they leave, they always recruit somebody to take their place. And lucky us, it's Tim Subram. So, Tim, how did you get involved in PFLAG?
Well, Rose and I have a transgender daughter, and I was aware of that before we married. And as we began growing together through finding out more about Susie and what she was facing, and what she was facing with us, and some of what she was hiding from us, and those kinds of things, Rose really looked for PFLAG. Susie told us that there was a chapter here, and so Rose found them on the internet, and we put our heads together and went to a meeting, I believe, in October of 2005, and been going ever since.
Uh-huh. Now, does Susie live in Houston?
No.
Uh-huh. And so, what kind of struggle were you looking at when you discovered that there was this child dealing with this issue in your life?
Well, Susie's my stepdaughter.
Mm-hmm.
She's Rose's by previous marriage, and so really probably I was able to accept all of the changes in a more detached sort of way. The emotional tugs, Susie and I have been very close, but the emotional tug wasn't so difficult for me as it was for Rose, because this was, mm-hmm. as she had always believed, her son.
And I understand, Rose, that you give Tim a lot of credit in helping you come to a place of acceptance.
Oh, yes. He keeps me grounded and helps me to listen, you know, better, and he's someone that I can talk to and hear his opinions and mine. So yes.
And how old was Susie when she started transitioning?
Well, she would have been 25, 26, as far as coming out to her friends and whatever. She told me it's been, oh, 3.5 years ago, I guess. And so she knew a lot longer, mm-hmm. than I did. But then once she found out that, once she started coming out and whatever, that was the biggest change in her life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was a good change.
Mm-hmm. Tim, tell us a little bit of what you look to do with this legacy that the Knowles have left.
Pray a lot. actually, probably the first challenge will be just finding the organization and the communication routes and getting to know people in the chapter better, getting to on a more personal level. One of the things that Rose and I have done over the last year and a half has been when we break up into our small groups, we've always gone and met with they have a transgender group especially for support. And so I've not been able to meet a lot of people in PFLAG or involved in PFLAG because I've always been in that one group. So that's one of my priorities, is really just to get to know more of the members and to become more familiar with the larger PFLAG community. And then we've got a huge job to do, as you've already pointed out. Jim and Sue both are PFLAG in Houston, as far as I think most of the GLBT community and anyone who are friends of the GLBT community are concerned. It's like losing the whole chapter almost. so we're going to be concentrating, especially in the next few months, on making sure that we're doing all the things that we've been doing in the past and doing them well. And trying to develop a little more broader support structure in terms of making sure that we're covering all the bases, because Jim and Sue covered more bases than I can possibly cover. So that'll be our first priority.
Well, one of the things that got us all here together tonight is that I read Rose's testimonial that she had presented at a PFLAG meeting back in November, and I was very moved by it. And so I said, Sue, can you tell me how to get in touch with this lady? Because, you know, we really need to have her on the show. And so we're going to close out our interview with the folks from the Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, with Rose Surum talking about her experience and coming to acceptance of finding out that she has a transgendered daughter.
Thank you, Deb. I wrote this for PFLAG as a testimonial, and I asked to do it. And I did it because it was a step for me. It's like I take some baby steps to get where I'm going on this journey with Susie and with other PFLAG members. So I'm just going to read it. PFLAG, Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbian, Gays, Bisexuals, and Transsexuals. It means supporting families, educating the public, advocating for equal rights. This really didn't mean much to me when I read it on the internet a year ago. My daughter told me about PFLAG when I told her I needed a support group to help me handle the situation I found myself in. At that time, I needed help for me. You see, my story actually began 3 years ago, and my youngest son, Chris, came over to my apartment and told me he had always felt like he was a she. We talked. Everything seemed okay. We met every Sunday and drank coffee and talked for the next 2 years. I kept calling her Chris because that was who she was to me, and she seemed to understand that this was going to take a little getting used to. I really never acknowledged her as a her. You see, she was always different. She never fit into society's view of how one should look or act. She wore hair in pigtails on the top of her head. She wore weird clothes, crazy pink socks, and I was used to it and the stares that she got all the time. She was changing, but I wasn't. I just went on like things had never changed. Just knowing inside. Tim, my husband now, knew. We weren't married at the time, you see. He was my best friend and is still my best friend, so it was not really so hard telling him. Well, last year about this time, Susie called and told me she was seeing a doctor about becoming a woman and that now she was taking hormones. It stopped me dead in my tracks. It took me a month before I could tell Tim. I can't explain why. It was at that moment of her telling me that she was on hormones that it all became real. This was nothing I could deny, nothing I could hide. This was real. Susie was becoming really Susie. And I was scared.
I was scared for Susie because I didn't know what these hormones would do to her. I've always been scared for her as far as being accepted by society because she'd already had confrontations with the police who would stop her on her bike and ridicule her for looking the way she did. And there were other people who would not or could not accept her being different. I was scared for myself because now I had a daughter, not a son. I really didn't understand what that meant to me, and this was real. I couldn't deny it or hide it anymore. So for a year, things seemed to be changing, but I wasn't. I was experiencing feelings that I couldn't understand. And not only was I having a hard time dealing with my own feelings, there were these questions. How will I tell my family about this? And if I'm having a hard time with this, how will it impact them? How will I introduce Susie? Or can I? What will people think? What will people at church think? What about people at work? This is where PFLAG came in. I needed help. I needed to be with other people who had gone through and were going through the same sort of life-changing experiences that I was. I had a hard time finding a support group, so eventually I just asked Susie for help, and she led me to PFLAG. She had been going to PFLAG in Memphis, Tennessee for some time, so that is what led me here. I asked him if he would go with me, and he did, and how thankful I was that he even wanted to. I was absolutely terrified. When Susan Pollock greeted us and asked if we had a gay, lesbian, or transgender child, I couldn't say anything. It was Tim who confessed. I know confessed is a hard word, but that is how I felt at the time. I was completely withdrawn and in shock at Susan's excitement that we had a transgender child. I was also in awe of her reaction and enthusiasm that someone had finally come. Because, you see, she'd been there 3 years waiting. She also had a transgender child, and she'd waited so long for other transgender family members to come. That opened a door for me that couldn't have been opened if it weren't for Susan and if I had not come. On our third visit, when we went to a regular group meeting that was not all about transgender, I began the first part of my healing. One of the parents, Joanne Dupree, said she has a gay son. It is like going through a death, the death of a child you gave birth to, and now the birth of the child you have now. And I couldn't hold back the tears. It was so hard. But it was important for me to understand that these feelings I was experiencing were similar to grieving. This is something only another parent would understand. Even though our situations are different, they are the same. Support? Yes. PFLAG is like a life thread that has helped me and is helping me through the different stages of this journey that I now go through with my daughter. Also, I have found I am not the only one. I'm not alone. PFLAG doesn't judge me. It's a place I come once a month to be with family, to talk about my family if I choose to. I don't have the right words to say about the education PFLAG provides. Each month, I have learned more and more from the great programs we've had. Education is the key. But I still get sad because even with education, people have to listen and have to have an open mind, advocating for equal rights. I never knew how hard people worked in this area and how hard this job will continue to be. So I guess I'm learning that there are different stages that we go through in this journey together. I am now on this journey with Susie. I love her. I'm proud of her courage, proud she has always been able to be herself, no matter how painful it can be and has been at times, that she is able to be the one who is real. There's one more thing about PFLAG that PFLAG has shown me. I came here for me, but I found that our children need us. They need to know we are here wanting to support each other and them. I found out that coming here is not just for myself or Susie, but for all of us. It is not just for me anymore.
Thank you, Rose. That wonderful testimonial, it just really says it all about the organization and what people need to have in their lives, and it speaks a lot about what real family values are about. So, Sue, would you once again give the phone number and the website?
Sure. Thank you. The website is pflaghouston.org. The telephone is 713-46-PFLAG or 713-467-3524. And before I leave Houston, I want to say thank you to all the wonderful people here who have participated in my incredible journey in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. It's been a real trip.
Thank you to all of you. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
KPFT will preempt regular programming on Tuesday, February 20th, for a special broadcast of the 10th Annual Homelessness Marathon. The Homelessness Marathon is a consciousness-raising, not a fundraising broadcast that presents the voices of experts, takes calls from around the country, and above all, puts homeless people on the air directly so America can hear who they really are and learn about the obstacles they face. The broadcast airs on KPFT on Tuesday, February 20th, from 11 p.m. through Wednesday at 6 a.m. Again, that's the Homelessness Marathon, a consciousness-raising broadcast aimed at addressing homelessness in America. Tuesday, February 20th, from 11 p.m. through Wednesday at 6 a.m., right here on KPFT, Houston. Everything.
1997. That was Steve Cohen. His album Silent Too Long, and that track was titled I Want Everything. This is Queer Voices.
Well, Glenn, I know you were looking at that weather radar, and it looks like the storms are east of us, the worst part of it. Although we have a storm here inside the studio. It's 84 degrees in here.
It's 5,000 degrees in here.
Yes. So all that money you donated, we're burning it in the back, it seems like. And speaking of fires, we're going to talk about politics. And every time we think it's going to get quiet, it sort of stirs up again. If you read the Chronicle today, there's a really good article about District I and the two Hispanic power forces that are trying to replace Carol Alvarado because of term limitations. Pretty good background there. And just for sake of being totally upfront, I am a employee of the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, and Jeff Reed is here joining us to talk about what's going on over there.
So there's a few things that are very important to HERA, and I think they're very important to the community, and I want to be clear to mention them up front. Number one, Garnett Coleman, who has long time been a very good friend to this community and who is one of the best state representatives in Texas, bar none, has decided to try to amend the James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Act to include transgender Texans. Now, this is a really big deal because a lot of people who are transgendered in Texas have essentially and actually no protection. They can be fired. They can be thrown out of their apartment. It is a sad case, but often someone will come out as their authentic selves to their friends, to their family, to their coworkers, and they'll lose their family, they'll lose their job, and they'll lose their house. And so Representative Coleman is trying to change this a little bit and make it harder for people in the transgendered community to be discriminated against and to be abused and cruelly misused as members of a protected class. Now, this only will protect them from hate crimes, but it's a first step along the way, and this is some of the most egregious behavior out there. It's essentially domestic terrorism trying to silence the transgendered community by, you know, beating up or killing in many cases, and we have the Transgender Day of Remembrance at the Holocaust Museum every year around Thanksgiving to remember those that were killed because they were transgender. But this is an essential piece of legislation. It's very important that it pass because it protects a largely unprotected segment of our community, and Garnett Coleman is the guy who is really running this. So we're encouraging everyone to call his office. I don't have his number here, although you can find it relatively easily online, and thank him. And I will also use this as a segue to talk about the lobby day that Equality Texas is having. This is one of our partner organizations. They are the statewide gay rights organization in Texas. They used to be called LGRL, the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby, but they're now called Equality Texas. And they're having a lobby day when people are encouraged to go to Austin physically, and this is actually very important, go to Austin physically and talk to their representatives and the representatives who are doing things they don't like in person. Now, so we encourage people to go to the lobby day. You can get more information about that at www.equalitytexas.org. And the day itself is, I believe, March 5th.
Yes, it's a Monday. And there is also training on that Sunday. And then there's like compact training on that Monday in case you can't make it up there on Sunday.
Right.
And there'll be information on the Equality Texas website. And it's really important because and probably some of you listening out there are in districts that are very supportive, like Garnett Coleman's district.
Or Ellen Cohen.
Or Ellen Cohen's or Jessica Farrar's. But you could, what they're trying to do is team up people from across the state. So there will be people there from other rural or not so progressive districts that you could probably go and sit in and help them.
Yes. And that's one thing I wanted to mention. Warren Chisholm, who is long time not been a very good friend to this community, or I believe his constituents out in Pampa, has signaled his intent. Now, there's no official word on how he intends to do this, but he signaled his intent to change the foster care laws in Texas so that foster care children would be placed, quote-unquote, preferentially with straight couples, and he's explicitly said that this is to, you know, put children in a house that household that has one man and one woman, and he quotes the flawed and non-scientific studies that claim that that's true. We need people there, particularly if you are in his district, or if you know someone who lives in his district out in Pampa, that would be great, but we need people there who can go and partner with the people who are from those districts, who can go to people like Chisholm and say, you know what, this is not fair, this isn't what, you know, we sent you to Austin to do, and you need to stop this. And so it's both going to Garnett and saying thank you, which, you know, many of us do, but we certainly should do more, but it's also about going to the people who are not our friends and standing up to them and saying, you know, we don't believe what you're doing is the right thing. So please go to qualitytexas.org, and I believe there's also a link to it from the HERA website, which is houstonera.org, and you can find more information about the lobby day, and if you can possibly make some time on a Monday in March, you know, please do that.
Well, and it's really important because, especially if you're listening to KPFT, you should know that politics is a participatory sport.
That's right.
You need to get involved.
This is not like the NBA, where we have now famously our best
and
new
friend. What does
the
NBA stand for?
National Basketball Association, where it is a perfect... I was just using this as some sort of lame segue into talking about this NBA player who just came out, John Amici, who he has a new book, and he's had quite a splash with being one of the few, I believe it's four now, ex-professional athletes who have come out. And but here is the sport, the politics here in Texas, where you don't actually have to just sit on the field and yell, you know, go team. You can actually get your hands dirty and go do things. And we really are encouraging people to go do that, particularly now that we have some great success with people like Ellen Cohen having taken Martha Wong's seat and, you know, Garnett standing up for our community as he always does. You know, we need to support those people who we put there and who are there doing the good work, and we also need to go and tell the people that we don't like that we don't like what they're doing.
Yes, you know, and speaking of people who are, you know, making positive contributions to the political system, there was a really great special that was run on KUT over the weekend about Barbara Jordan. You know, Barbara Jordan only served in the House of Representatives for 6 years, but she was just known all over because she was, she spoke out. She wasn't afraid to speak out. And I talk about that and getting involved. I mean, right now, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is beginning their screening process for the May 15th election to replace the at-large position 3.
It's Shelley Sekula Gibbs' old council seat.
Right. And they're going to be interviewing at least 3 candidates so far, and then making a endorsement at their meeting in March, the first Wednesday in March.
And I believe you can get more information about that at the caucus website, which is hglbtpc.org. And I also encourage anyone to get involved in the caucus, particularly in the screening process if they can, because it's really exciting and interesting to talk one-on-one and ask questions of the people who are asking to be your representatives.
Yes, and the caucus and HERA have moved to new offices at 1915 Commonwealth at Welsh, and there's volunteer sessions every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. if you're interested in getting involved in any of the aspects, from fundraising to building the database to registering voters to doing voter ID, all that wonderful and fun stuff. And, you know, you sort of notice us, and we talk about it a lot during the election cycles, but this work goes on year-round.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it is behind the scenes, and a lot of it is thankless, although you get to meet some very fun and interesting characters, such as the inimitable Fat Jack Valensky here, and Tammy Wallace and Maria Gonzalez, and pillars of our community who really put a lot in to the community to make it a better place. But they're also fun people to work with and to play around with. So, you know, come by and say hi.
Play around with?
I mean that in the most asexual sense possible.
possible.
Also, I'd like to thank everybody who showed up for the Hera fundraiser last Wednesday at the
Chocolate Bar. This is a great little chocolate store on Alabama. They were kind enough to donate 40% of the proceeds of that night, which is quite an unheard of number for this kind of fundraiser. Usually it's more like 20%. And, you know, they did a great job for us. They worked really hard, and they gave us the run of the place, and it was a hugely successful fundraiser. It was a lot of fun for everybody, and we really encourage people to continue to go to the Chocolate Bar. They're great friends of the community, and you know, thanks to everybody for coming out and buying some chocolate.
So if you'd like some more information on HERA, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, the website is houstonera.org. And like I said, volunteer sessions are every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 1915 Commonwealth at Welsh, and it's sometimes known as the former Kinky Freedman's Governor's Headquarters in Houston. It's funny how that all worked out. Jeff, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, you're listening to KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
You're about the incredibly true adventures of two women of note, a trailblazing U.S. orator politician and a long-absent award-winning filmmaker. But first, literary commentator Janet Mason thinks a prominent queer author is horrible, though to be fair, she admits that she's horrible too.
There's a line in Augustine Burroughs' newest book, Possible Side Effects, from St. Martin's Press that says, "She was incredibly funny, but in a way that made you say, 'That's horrible,' before you laughed." The fact is that Augustine himself invokes this same sentiment all throughout his writing. In his selections about his childhood, "I loathe the Wild West. I'd sooner watch the snow static on a television set than a John Wayne Western." His writing about the advertising industry: "It was a low point in my career when I found myself as the sole copywriter on the Junior Mint's account." And in another essay, when he says, "Sara Lee chocolate chip cheesecake drove me from the advertising industry." In his piece about his collection of college T-shirts, Augustine, who tells us that his formal education ended with elementary school, writes, "People occasionally stop me to greet me with great enthusiasm, and I will get a terrible feeling that I slept with them in a drunken blackout and have forgotten them entirely. But then they point to my shirt. What year? I was 86. My favorite is my Harvard T-shirt because I am delusional enough to imagine myself a Harvard grad. And that's what they're called, Harvard grads, never graduates." Like identifies with like. I, too, have on occasion evoked the "that's horrible" response from friends before sending them into spasms of laughter. Perhaps for this reason, several years ago, before Augustine's memoir, Running with Scissors, was made into a major motion picture, several friends of mine began saying, "There's this writer who you absolutely have to read." Not only did I love him, but I found him absolutely essential. He is a lifesaver. I read my way through Magical Thinking, a brilliant collection of essays, Dry, his disturbing memoir of overcoming alcoholism, Running with Scissors, the almost unbelievable memoir of his comic tragic childhood, and Television, a short novel. I felt like I had found a new friend. His latest collection of essays, Possible Side Effects, did not disappoint. Call it kismet. When I first picked up this collection in the bookstore, it fell open in my hands to the essay entitled GWF Seek Same. Augustine, who by self-definition is prone to excess, convinces his shallow and vain lesbian friend, who finds that definition tolerable only if she adds lipstick to it, to write a full-page personal ad and place it in New York Magazine. More than being a list of all that she likes, it is a listing of what she doesn't like, and begins with a lead-in, lipstick lesbian seeks same. After she places the ad, Augustine reads it and writes, "Not only was the ad mortifyingly specific in what was and was not acceptable, not only was it horrifically shallow, not only was it the entire page, but it was my idea. She would blame me and make me pay the $3,000 that the ad had cost." When his friend tells the then-single Augustine that he, too, should place an ad, he dismisses her. "I didn't tell her that I did place ads all the time. I went on AOL and wrote personal ads when I was drunk. Sometimes I was a gay guy who wanted to meet other gay guys interested in becoming straight. Writing personal ads was my drunk fun. It was the solitary, intoxicated equivalent of throwing eggs through the open window of a passing car on the freeway." In the conclusion of GWF Seeks Same, Augustine gives her more bad advice, resulting in obsessive, some would say stalker-like, behavior toward a woman she had begun to date. His friend ends up with someone from her, quote, "no pile," a beautiful redhead, a criteria that she had ruled out, a nurse, which she was equally as dismissive of, and, of course, the woman that Augustine had liked best from the very beginning. Reading his unflattering portrayal of a lesbian who did not like that word did cause me to roll my eyes. But while Augustine's writing has its profound and even compassionate moments, the fact remains that he rarely speaks well of anyone, with the possible exception of his dogs and his longtime partner, Dennis. Dennis is portrayed as Augustine's stable force, the one who manages his life and puts up with his quirks. Reading between the lines, we find that Dennis is an admirable character because, above all else, he tolerates Augustine, a basis that all true love ultimately depends on. If you have not yet read Augustine, chances are that you'll come to love him also. But just remember, he's horrible. With commentary on queer literature and life, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
Barbara Jordan, stateswoman and orator. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Barbara Jordan was born in Texas in 1936. Beginning her career in law, she yearned for a role in political change. She worked for the local Democratic Party, speaking out on contemporary issues. In 1966, Barbara's political charisma secured her a seat in the Texas Senate. 6 years later, she was the first black woman from a southern state elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. In the late 60s, she met psychologist Nancy Earle. Hiding her lesbianism for the sake of her career, she publicly portrayed Nancy as just a close friend. Yet they shared a home as a devoted couple for 30 years. In 1994, Barbara was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. When she died in 1996, the press hounded Nancy for details about their private life, but she refused in her last act of loyalty to the woman she loved. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Candace Kingbrick.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. You can also now get CDs of our program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
The wait is finally over for a follow-up feature from the woman behind The Incredibly True Adventure of Two Girls in Love. More than 10 years later, she brings us a new screwball comedy called Puccini for Beginners. This Way Out's Steve Pride has a preview and asks writer-director Maria Magenti what took her so long.
In Puccini for Beginners, Allegra loves Samantha, but she won't say so. Grace loves Philip, but he won't marry her. Samantha leaves Allegra. Allegra meets Philip. Philip leaves Grace. Allegra falls for Philip. Allegra meets Grace. Grace falls for Allegra. Allegra falls for Grace. And as they say, hilarity ensues.
Great. Oh, God. Usually it takes me such a long time, but this time it was like boom, 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 boom. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, I knew when I met you that something sparkly was happening.
I thought so, too. I'm getting pumped out. My name's still sleeping.
Whoa. Whoa, 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 sweetie, what is it? What's wrong? What is it? No, it's not you, it's just... Sex is so, so great, but it's sad too, you know? It just brings up so many emotions, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It's just, are you gonna call me?
Of course I'm gonna call you.
Are you gonna call me? If you call me.
Well, I'm gonna call you.
And then I'll call you.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that out of here.
When are you going to call me?
I'm Maria Magenti. I am the filmmaker of Puccini for Beginners.
And this is not your first lesbian-themed film.
No, it's not. No, my first film was The Incredibly True Adventure of Two Girls in Love, and I made that film in 1995, so maybe some listeners were maybe too young to see it, but you can get it on DVD. And that film was also an independent film about two girls. It was a teen interracial lesbian comedy, dramedy, and it fell in kind of an interesting historical, political, celluloid moment because there weren't a lot of lesbian films or lesbian-themed films at that time. Go Fish was kind of the first, and then Two Girls was part of that second kind of wave. And then in the last 10 years, there's been an extraordinary shift in both mainstream and alternative media in terms of lesbian and gay films and filmmaking. So, no, it's not my first.
What's it about?
Puccini is an absolutely universal love story. It's about that problem everyone deals with, what to do when you have two lovers. That is what the film is about.
I don't have one, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It is about a woman who falls in love with a man and then falls in love with a woman and starts seeing them at the same time and finds out that the two of them are ex-boyfriend and girlfriend.
They can't be exes.
Break it off right now. You have got to get out of there before this turns into a total calamity.
My God, if things can get this bad in New York City, imagine what it's like in a small town. Then again, New York City is a small town.
I hope there's not a lot of heterosexuality in this film. I don't mind whatever sick things those people do in their private lives, but it's not something I want to see. I don't, it just bothers me.
Does it? Okay, well, let's put it this way. It works along the spectrum of queer experience.
What inspired this?
What inspired it? My life. I don't really have any imagination whatsoever, so if my life is boring, I'm not making anything, and when things get exciting, I immediately have a story. With two girls, I was still in my late 20s, still not over my very first girlfriend, and that's what stimulated the story, Incredibly True Adventure. It was really based on me and my first girlfriend, and that amazing experience of saying I love you for the first time and thinking it's the last time you'll ever say it, because you usually don't stay that stupid, you know? Puccini, which took 7 years to make, not by choice, but that's how long it took, was indeed about an experience I'd had, which is that I'd been a lesbian and, you know, not a quiet one, a kind of a loud-mouthed, active one for many, many years, and I fell for a guy, and my life got turned upside down, so I decided to use that. This is the screwball version. My life wasn't exactly the screwball version of that.
7 years? You were filming 7 years or just getting it together?
It took 7 years to get the financing to make the movie. And in the meantime, I had to make a living. So I worked as a screenwriter for Hollywood movies. I wrote a movie called The Love Letter. And actually was my first job after Two Girls was from Nina Jacobson, who's a lesbian. And it was very, very helpful. She was very helpful. helpful to me. And then I built up this career as kind of a Hollywood screenwriter, even though I was this chick who lived in the East Village in New York, and kept trying to make the movie and trying to make the movie and couldn't find the financing, couldn't find the cast. And then Indigent stepped in, the same people who made Pieces of April and Tadpole, and we shot it in 18 days and cut it in 8 weeks and premiered at Sundance, January 2006. And here we are.
Amazing. And you have an incredible cast. Talk about that.
Elizabeth Reeser is our lead. She plays Allegra, our main character. She's a wonderful actress, Juilliard trained. I feel like maybe she was the reason it took me 7 years, because I needed to find that woman who is described in the script as somebody who cares more about her vocabulary than she does her looks. And, you know, also had to be sexy in a dykey way, and had to be sexy in a way that a guy would like her as well. Then I have Justin Kirk, who is an amazing actor, is currently in Weeds. And I have Gretchen Mol, who almost as if she was born to be the part of Grace.
And they both have other gay film connections, because Justin was in Angels in America.
Right.
Gretchen was in Quinn's movie.
Right, Notorious Betty Page, uh-oh. Yeah, which she's wonderful in. So all of them, it was, you know, these things are alchemical. You don't know what's going to make it work. So I got very lucky.
What do you want the audience to take away from this film besides falling out of their chairs laughing?
Golly, I hope that people feel like, wow, you know, there's a story out there that requires more than knowing more than three words, and it's funny and it's intelligent, and I deal a lot with gender and with desire and the kind of strange places that can lead a person.
You know what I realized from being with you? My ex-boyfriend never really cuddled.
Did you ask him to cuddle?
No, I think a person should know.
No, a person can't know what another person is thinking, Grace. Next time, tell him.
I'm never going back to him.
So tell the next boyfriend.
You're my next boyfriend.
This has been a conversation with writer-director Maria Magenti. Puccini for Beginners is from Strand Releasing and stars Elizabeth Reeser, Gretchen Mol, Justin Kirk, and Julianne Nicholson. For more information about this and other LGBT films, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Rick Watts, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Candace Gingrich, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some very special CD thank you gifts, too. We literally can't go on without you. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WGDR, Plainfield, Vermont, 2BOB, Terre, New South Wales, KDHX, St. Louis, Missouri, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
I wanna be a judge. I wanna be kept at the school to run. Nike sneaker. Not just to drive in, I want to wear an Adidas sweatsuit. Not just to sleep in, I want to be a jock. I want to straight to lift heavy weights, stare at myself in the mirror and say I look great. I want to take full periods of gym attendance, sweat like a dog, smell like a pig. That is what the guys seem to be. I want to run with my shirt off in 50-degree weather so that my friends could say that guy thought it all together.
Going again from 1997, his album Silent Too Long, I Want to Be a Jock. This is Queer Voices.
King at this time with James Sells, who's with the organization Americans United for Separation of Church and State. I think that pretty much says what the organization is about. It's often called AU or Americans United. Welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And tell me a little bit about what the organization is and how it kind of came about and
This
some
was
of its history.
Born back in the 40s, and it was an outgrowth of the Baptist Church, actually, and for a long time it was Baptists United for Separation of Church and State. We've been around for more than 50 years. There's a national office, and they're active in legislation, and they put together friend of the court briefs for the Supreme Court in particular. We've had several successful legal cases recently. The Dover, Pennsylvania ID trial is one of the examples of that. We had a very good outcome from that. In Iowa, the Iowa prison case was won by AU, and AU often cooperates with the ACLU and works together with them. And our national director, Barry Lynn, was with the AU for a while. And he's regularly here in Houston speaking to our membership.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a Houston chapter.
Yes, the local chapter is concerned with education, with trying to get our legislators to do the right thing. And we're doing mostly education for the public and trying to lobby the legislature, and our meeting that we're here to talk about is part of that.
Yeah, this coming up this Saturday, the 17th, there's a workshop, and the only thing that I saw said an activist workshop, and I thought, well, okay, what does that mean? And so once again, I got in touch with my friend Sue Knoll, and I said, Sue, do you know anything about this? And she says, oh, these are the people you need to talk to, and turns out it's people that I know, the workshop, what is the purpose of the workshop Saturday?
Well, every 2 years the Texas legislature convenes.
We let them meet only every 2 years. We're safer that way.
It is a lot safer. And so we try to get our organization and others ready for the legislature by having workshops and telling people how they need to approach the legislature, how they need to approach local bodies like the city council, how to best get their ideas across in letters to the editor and op-ed pages. We have some people who will give them advice about testifying before hearings at the state legislature.
Mm-hmm. And so is there a lobby day coming up for the
yes.
organization?
AU is going to have its lobby day on the 7th of March, which is a Wednesday, and we're looking at issues that are going to be in committees, and who's going to be on the committees. We're going to find things that are associated with church and state and try to convince lobbyists to see them our way.
Do you work very much with the Texas Freedom Network?
We do. We cooperate with several organizations, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They are in Austin, and there's a fledgling Austin chapter of AU, and we're hoping to set up some others around Texas, but for years, Houston had the only local chapter.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you think might be coming up at the legislature? In the past, some of the issues that they were dealing with?
They always bring up vouchers, always. We've had some interesting arguments about textbook selection. We've got another bill to put In God We Trust up prominently in the Senate House and the Representatives Chamber, and we oppose that sort of thing.
It's really interesting because you talk about textbooks, and that's definitely an issue of the GLBT community, where they pretty much try to either eliminate us or smear us. And these are definitely some of these same issues that we need to, you know, work together on.
So this workshop, is it open to everyone?
Yes, our workshop.
You don't have to be a member of the organization.
Oh, no. Last time we had this was a little over 2 years ago, and the first people who sent in reservations, we didn't know any of them. They were from groups like the Gray Panthers, and this is open to anyone who wants to show up.
So anyone that wants to learn about how to be an effective advocate, either by writing letters to the editor, op-ed pieces, talking to your legislator, and what issues are out there that you need to be concerned about, can attend. And how much does it cost?
Oh, this is free.
It's for free. My favorite price. And so where will it be?
This will be held at Stages Repertory Theater, which is near the intersection of Wall Drive and the Allen Parkway. It's just a block or so from Wall off D'Amico on a street called Rosine.
Mm-hmm. And they're classy. They get to use a theater for the workshop. And what time will it be?
We'll have registration from 9:30 to 10, and then the meeting will be from 10 till noon, and we'll be out pretty promptly at noon.
Okay. And so who is going to be presenting the subject matter?
Well, we have some excellent people to talk to you. Nancy Friedman is a practicing lawyer, and she'll talk about legislation that's been proposed, and in particular the ones that we want to either support or oppose. She was the Let Freedom Ring organization for about 10 years, and we have Sue Knoll, who will talk about writing letters to the editor and opinion pieces. She's been very big with PFLAG, and both of these people were at our last workshop and were excellent. Charlotte Kofelt, who founded our local chapter, will be talking about lobbying elected officials. She's a teacher and a retired administrator from the public schools. We're going to have State Representative Jessica Farrar talking about how representatives that are elected want to be approached and the best way to get their cooperation and to help them.
Another one of our good friends that we have from the Houston delegation in the House are good folks for the most part.
We'll also have Bill Gagan, who has experience testifying before committees and hearings. He's teaching biology at Montgomery College now.
Mm-hmm. So you can go for the lobby day for equality. I forgot the name of the organization.
Equality Texas.
It is Equality Texas.
Changing the names on us.
You could just stay in Austin and have a good time for a day, and then be there on the 7th. You know. And is there any kind of organized way for people to like travel together to go to Austin, or their buses, or
We were going to look into that. If we have a big turnout, we might be able to rent a bus. We'll probably have several people taking carloads of people up there. We will schedule appointments with legislators so that they know we're coming and they'll be available when we're there.
Mm-hmm. The person who is over the education committee is Florence Shapiro from the Dallas area, and she is actually against the tax testing. She wants to get rid of that, and we say, yay, that's good. But it was like a big surprise because here's someone who's traditionally been anti-everything that we're for, and she's doing something that we agree with, but she's also very big on vouchers and the teachers organizations. And I was up in Austin for Women's Legislative Days, and we had about 23 people in the room talking to one of the aides, and you know, they were we really told him how we felt as parents, how we felt as teachers, and we don't want vouchers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about vouchers. Why are we against vouchers? And, you know, part of the reason, there's of course a number of reasons, but basically they're taking money out of the school system, the public school system, and funding separatist type of institutions. Not all of them,
right,
but
and
many of them.
The public education system is what made this country great, and that's essentially it. Vouchers are always going to be at the cost of public education, so we need to find a way to make a more even keel for all schools to get the funding that they need, and to, for there to be equality in that.
Right, and these schools that want the, you know, the vouchers to go through, they also don't usually want the government to keep things open, to open equal access and non-discrimination, and more enlightened about thinking about things like science.
Yeah.
The charter schools have been an absolute disaster in Texas. There are probably one or two that have done well, and the great majority have been failures in many ways. They don't make reports. They don't keep records. They don't necessarily test anyone. They may not have textbooks.
They don't necessarily have to have any certification.
Our representative is Scott Hochberg, and he said that there was a charter school somewhere in East Texas that took $250,000 and was never heard from again.
Oh, gosh, that's a good gig if you can get it. So what are some of the other issues that Americans United for Church and State deals with?
We are actively trying to get the Christian prison movements like Interchange, which is Charles Colson's group, out of Texas. Right now, Texas is funding several religious prison movements, and the way these worked in Iowa got them thrown out, and got the Colson group in Iowa was told that they had to return the money that the state had given them, I think $1.5 million.
So the state is giving money to a faith-based or a religious organization to do something within the prison system?
Well, it's more complicated than that. They have arranged to do something that looks like they are not getting money at the moment.
Uh-huh.
But they are being provided with space, and they're being given things, but not money.
Mm-hmm.
What they have offered to the prisoners is, for in exchange for adopting some religious ideals, they will give them special privileges. They'll give them work that pays better than the ordinary pay. They give them extended visits from families that aren't available to other prisoners. And in Iowa, they were found to have pushed out people that clearly had a higher recidivism rate so that they could skew the results and look like they were more successful than they really are.
My goodness. I mean, I'm certainly for people that are in prison to have access to whatever ministry that they desire, but for the state to be paying for it, that's pretty appalling. And I heard a report today about the faith-based initiatives, and I think there's a case dealing with that in one of the states. I can't recall exactly what it was, but they were talking about how, like, you give money to a group such as the Salvation Army, and then they're supposed to use it to do things that help the community. And these groups, it'd be different if those groups are like doing things instead of the government paying for it. But this is the government paying them to do it, rather than it being like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Not non-denominational, but not... in other words, you can go out and you can help feed people, you can help clothe people, you can help people find work, you can do all these kinds of things, such as groups such as Search does, or helping the homeless, or interfaith ministries, which has religious base, but they always did their fundraising and got their money and did the work. It wasn't the government giving them the money to do it.
Well, I think the interfaith thing, the faith-based initiatives create all kinds of problems for the government and for religion, because they start their religions opposing each other in order to get money from the government, and that kind of money grubbing is not something you want to associate with a religion. The government should not be promoting any particular religion over others, and you can't just say in God we trust, if you're not going to say in Allah we trust, and Buddha, you know, you're not going to put up signs to every religion.
Yeah.
And efforts to pick just one out and make it the one that we recognize are opposed to our freedoms.
It's real interesting that right-wing radio keeps saying we're founded on Christian values, and that every other religion seems to be, they want to be excluded.
Would you say Americans United is an atheist organization?
No, it's interesting. Americans United is nonpartisan.
Since they started off from Baptist, that would be...
And it's nonsectarian. We have members...
Nonsectarian, that was the word I was looking for.
We have members in the Houston area who are Republicans, Democrats, Greens, Independents, Libertarians, people of no political persuasion. We have Baptists, Methodists, Catholics, Hindus, Buddhists, Jews, atheists. We have people across the entire spectrum of both politics and religion.
So before we close off here, I just want to ask you, is separation of church and state a myth? Because the phrase separation of church and state doesn't even occur in the Constitution.
Well, that's an interesting argument, and we've heard it often. As another example, the phrase separation of powers doesn't occur in our Constitution, but it is a bedrock foundation of how our government is supposed to work.
And there's a lot being done right now to erode that.
Yes.
And they're not being, what is the word they use, a una something, they it's a, in other words, they're, Bush would be like, have power over everything. It wouldn't be the three branches of government anymore.
Checks and balances.
Yeah, the checks and balances.
Those are in some ways missing at the moment.
Yes, yes. Well, and that's something that Americans United brings to people's attention and helps educate them about the issues that are involved and why we need to have a separation between government and certain religions. People have freedom to believe or not believe as they do.
Well, if you read the Founding Fathers, Jefferson and Madison in particular, they were very strongly in favor of keeping church and state separate in order for us to have a free society and in order to protect religious freedom.
Right, because another reason that this country was founded were people were trying to avoid being told what they could believe or could not believe. They fled England so that they would be able to practice their religion as they chose and not be governed by what the state told them. So we've been talking to Jim Sells. He's with Americans United for Church and State, and there will be an activist workshop on February 17th at Stages, and you just have to show up at 9 o'clock?
Show up at 9:30, and we'll start at 10.
Okay, so you can sleep a little bit later.
We'd like for you to reserve a place with us so we can put together a package for all those who show up.
So how do they do that?
If you will call us at 713-782-8962, or you can email us at HoustonAU at flash.net.
Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices, and I've got an interview to share with you with Ann Reed. It was actually recorded in November when Ann came to Houston for one of her rare concert appearances here. Unfortunately, when she arrived, she had a severe case of laryngitis, and the concert had to be canceled. Well, now it's rescheduled, and it's Sunday, February 25th at 8 p.m. at Heinen Theater. I'll give you more information at the end of the interview. But before we get to the interview, I want to share with you one of her songs. Her music is filled with the stories of our lives, with rough and smooth edges, and often with humor. And when I think of the humor in her songs, I think of this one.
Welcome to Queer Voices.
Hi, how are you?
Well, that was Power Tools from your album Timing Is Everything from 1997.
Indeed.
You've been one of our most prolific artists. I've been trying to figure out how many recordings you've released.
I think the latest one that just came out in April, it's called Telling Stories. I think that one is number 15 or 16. I can't remember.
That's amazing. I've got an album by you. It's vinyl from 1981 called Carpe Diem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was my first one.
I was wondering if that was your first.
Yes, that was my
You were
very
so
first.
Young.
I know. You know, that's one thing. It's like your picture is all over these mm-hmm. things. And okay.
You wonder at the wisdom of putting your pictures on the album.
Yeah, I'm starting to think maybe not.
Well, you said you got a brand new album. Tell us about that release.
Telling Stories is actually a kind of a celebration of my 25 years of making recordings. My first recording came out in 1980. This one is a two-disc set. One disc is new songs that I wrote for the CD, done in the studio. And the second disc is actually a concert recording. So it's the first time I've ever had anything like that, had live stuff on a CD.
Your first live CD.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's neat.
Well, it's actually technically not my first live CD, but I had another one called Back and Forth that was recorded in a bar here in Minneapolis called Artist Quarter, and that was a long time ago.
Over the years, how's your music changed?
I think I've become more fussy as a writer. It's become harder to write as I'm getting older, and the more I write, I'm just getting a little more, I don't know, just it takes longer to write songs now. And certainly the technology has changed more than anything else.
Well, has your writing process changed?
I don't know if the process has changed that much. You know, I mean, I still write for the same reasons, and it's still about life and living and observing and, you know, experiencing things. So I don't think the process has changed that much.
I've had artists tell me that a song kind of comes through them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your experience, too?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I walk around, I have pieces of paper, and I have a little pad of paper that I always walk around with in case I think of something or something just kind of pops into my head. But when it's time to sit down and write, it's kind of interesting to see where it takes you. When I'm picking up the guitar and I'm just kind of coming up with a melody line or something that I'm working with.
And you say, you know, where did I put that piece of paper?
Right.
Where's that napkin
Wait,
that I wrote that on?
What was that? I was a great line. Where is that?
Yeah. How much do you think is art and how much do you think is craft?
Oh, good question. You know, I had a discussion with another songwriter named Beth McIntosh, who's primarily in Montana, and we were talking about songwriting one time, and she said, you know, it's like being temporarily insane. And it really kind of is, because there's a moment where you're just, it's almost like you lose consciousness, and you're just kind of writing. It's just kind of coming out, and you're writing all this stuff, but then there is a craft to it, where you have to go back, and you have to say, well, wait a minute, you know, this is not working right here, and this needs to be over here, or whatever that is. So I don't know what percentage it is, but it certainly is a marriage of those two things.
Is there any song that comes to mind when I ask, what song are you most proud of that you've written? Artist is a difficult question.
It is a very difficult question, but there actually is one song that is kind of, it has become a favorite of mine, and I don't even know why that is, but the song Carolyn's Party, it comes off of a CD called Through the Window, is one that for me is not only meaningful because I wrote it for a friend of mine, and to me it's about friendship, but it is also a song that's just really fun for me to play. It's an interesting guitar song, too.
That question is always interesting to me because I have these, of course, I'm human. I have these preconceived conceptions that the artist is going to name my favorite song as the one they're most proud of. And, and sometimes that's the case, and sometimes they name something that I think, really?
Yeah. Oh, I know. And, you know, and the thing is that 2 days from now, I may answer the question differently. It may be like, oh, no, today.
Yeah.
Today my favorite song is...
It's the song you wrote last.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like people will come up and say, what's your favorite CD? And that one's even harder to say. Usually it is the one that I'm most familiar with. It's the one I've just finished.
I asked that question of Suede. You probably know her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, choose between my babies?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is. I mean, it is kind of like, well, this kid's good, but this one gave me a little trouble right here.
Okay, when an artist kind of gives me trouble in answering that question, I say, okay, what song gets the most audience reaction?
Heroes has always been a big favorite. of people. That seems to be a song that people have really connected with, as they have a song called Leap of Faith. Power Tools, the one you played, has been a favorite of audiences, too.
I can't resist Power Tools. in a way, it's not fair to play that, because they might think, oh, she does parodies. And that's
right.
Not true, you know.
No, but, I mean, well, it is,
yeah,
partially because of that song. But, you know, I couldn't resist it.
Well, you also couldn't resist doing one called Goodbye, George.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier.
Yeah.
Tell
you
us about that song.
One, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We played it on here. Tell us about it, though.
Well, I had the CD release concert up here. It was in St. Paul, and I was sitting around. I was practicing, and it just popped into my head that really we needed to have a song in the show that was going to be about George Bush. And I got together with a friend of mine, Julie Madden, and we actually wrote it kind of over the phone and via email. I said, I think Jambalaya is going to be the thing. I don't know why I chose that, but
that's the Creedence song.
And yeah, and I thought, well, that'll work, you know. And we just started working on it, and I had no idea how it was going to go over, but the recording you have is that recording that was at the Fitz here.
Give us the first line or two of that so the listeners get an example.
They see, goodbye, George, you gotta go, me oh my oh. I mean, as soon as that started, people were very excited, and I thought, oh, good, we're going to have fun with this.
We've got a connection here.
Yeah.
What are your concerts like?
What are they like?
Mm-hmm. What can people expect when they come to see you?
You know, I do a lot of, I tend to reveal more in concerts. I do a lot of storytelling. Not a lot, but I mean, I do tell stories in between the songs and tell kind of where the songs came from or some connection to the song. I came from a long tradition of listening to folk music when I was growing up and listening to concerts where the artist actually, you learned more about the artist by going to the concert. It wasn't just showing up and having them play their songs and you leave and feel like, well, God, I could have stayed home and just listened to their CD. They didn't really say anything. So I tend to try to give a little bit more to the audience and have them leave feeling like they know a little bit more about me.
I think that's a very nice feature of your latest CD, because there's the second disc is concert, and you do have the stories included.
Uh-huh. Right.
It really fills in and fleshes them out, and it makes you pay attention more.
Well, I think it's interesting to know where artists come up with their songs. I think it gives you some insight into how it was written. I've had some people come up and say, I had no idea that that's what that song was about. To me, it was about, you know, which is fascinating. And that's the interesting thing about art, is that people just look at it from different perspectives.
Fortress.
Very nice. That was Ann Reed from her latest album, Telling Stories. The song was called Stay That Way. And that's just a sample of what you can hear in her concert. And here's the details. It's on Sunday, February 25th, 8 p.m. at the Heinen Theater. And I can see you. Some people out there are scratching their heads. Where's that? That's on the campus of Houston Community College. The address is 3517 Austin. That puts it a block east of La Branch and about three blocks north of Alabama. Folks who want information on Ann, go to www.annreed.com. And I've also got an 800 number. That's 800-947-9180. Again, that's February 25th at 8 p.m. This is J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
You know, J.D. was on tape. He wasn't here live. We're giving away that illusion. But and I wanted to talk to him a little bit about this, because last Tuesday, Independent Lens on PBS did a profile of Billy Strayhorn.
Strayhorn,
thank you. He was basically the person who wrote a lot of Duke Ellington's music, and he was sort of in the background, and he was gay.
Yeah, he was gay.
Yes, and it talks about that. In fact, that's probably one of the reasons why he did so much stuff in the background. Very interesting story, and I actually saw part of it on TV, but they were interviewing the makers of this film on Day to Day and Fresh Air on last Tuesday. So I guess there's a little bit more of the universe of music that J.D. will be playing.
Well, you know, he's got such a wealth, and of course you can go to his website, queermusicheritage.com. We want to thank our guests for tonight. We had the wonderful folks from PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. That's Jim and Sue Knoll, who are going to be leaving us. We wish them all the luck in the world and fond farewell. And Tim and Rose Soonrum, who are taking over for the Knolls, not really taking over, but you know, they're the new folks that will be in charge at PFLAG. And Jeff Reed, our buddy from Houston Equal Rights Alliance, talking about politics. We also talked with Jim Sells with American United about the workshop that is on February 17th. That's at Stages Theater. And if you want to learn more about how to be an activist and making a difference, you can go to the workshop.
Right, and just a reminder that voting for Grand Marshal for this year's Pride Parade is Wednesday at Brazos River Bottom, which is 2400 Brazos, from 6 to 10. This Saturday and the following Saturday at the Pride Office, 1415 California, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then a week from Wednesday at a place to be announced. Go to the website, pridehouston.org.
And next week on the show, we'll have Paul Scott, Executive Director of Equality Texas, talking about the upcoming lobby day. We'll also have Jennifer Renee talking about the foster care status in Texas. Jack's going to be talking with guests about the AIDS Walk for 2007. And I will be talking to Carol Wyatt, the president of the board of Pride Houston. We're going to step aside from the continuing controversy about the changes that are planned for 2008 and focus on what's being planned for this year.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Join the celebration as the Men and Women of Heart Gala honors 10 outstanding citizens of Houston's Greater Bay Area on Saturday, February 24th at South Shore Harbor Hotel. This event benefits Bay Area Turning Point, a United affiliate that provides shelter and crisis intervention to victims of domestic and sexual violence and homelessness. For tickets, call 713-289-3654 or 281-488-4640. For the gala honoring the 10 most outstanding citizens of Houston's Greater Bay Area, this is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
We've all played that game. What does he do that you'd take to a desert island if you had only one choice?
Maybe it would be something by...
Get up, get on up. Get...
Or maybe it would be a disc from...
Well, let's play it now, but with a twist.
What radio station would you take to a desert island if you had only one choice?
There's only one answer to that question.
It's KPFT, of course.
We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend on us to keep you up to date.
And radio that's worth listening to is radio that's worth supporting. Over 90% of our funding comes from people just like you.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.